With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the United Stand from the studio. Smash a like and get involved. Lots to talk about this morning. We're talking quick January transfer swoops from Ruben Amorim, Ivan Toney and Joe Bellingham being mentioned, as well as a former colleague at Porto. We'll talk about that. Also, Bayern Munich looking at Bruno Fernandes. Is that something that would appeal to him, appeal to Bayern, appeal to Manchester United? We've also got a raft of ex-players and pundits talking about Harry Maguire and Ruben Amorim. I want to delve into that. I also want to delve into the massive positives in Manchester United's squad and see if you agree with me on that one. We've also got updates on Xerxes, two other strikers we might be looking at as well. It's a busy morning and there's a lot to get into, but we're going to start off talking about Jobe Bellingham. We spoke about him last week. The midfield is obviously an interesting area for Manchester United. And actually, let me just reel off some of the positives about Man United this morning, because as much as people might look at the Liverpool game and run away with positives, or they might go, it's one game and we're going to be back where we were in a couple of weeks. Cunha and Mbeumo, Yoro, Dorgu, Lemens, Sesko, Ahmad, Mazraoui, De Ligt. That's a lot of players. I don't know how many are named there, 7, 8, 9. That's a lot of players there. That's a lot of players to build a future with. But there's no midfielders. There's no midfielders there, is there? And I think that is a good point. I can list off players that I think Man United can build a future with, but I don't mention any midfielders, and it's such an important area. So I think it's one that Man United have to be looking at. We know they're looking at, and they need to resolve it as quick as possible. Now, whether that's going to be Bruno Fernandes turning into a midfielder, Casemiro rolling back the clocks, Ugarte living up to his price tag, or Mainoo giving an opportunity, or going into the transfer market, or promoting a young player, all of those have issues. And Man United need to solve those issues very, very quickly. So Jobe Bellingham, as much as the chat is saying no, 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 he does present an opportunity. And yet again, more stories coming out this morning of him and tensions at Dortmund and unsettled. We saw the stories about his father, who's his agent, having a pop at Dortmund, saying he's not getting enough game time. He didn't start the game against Bayern at the weekend. The January transfer market is moving close. He's unsettled. Dortmund aren't the sort of club that dwells on a problem. And this could move quite quickly. It could move quite quickly. It could be a loan deal. It could be a permanent deal. And it's in the midfield. Now, is it a deal that Man United should be looking at? And I think that, regardless of what I think, because I said to you last week, and I know a lot of you did as well, January is about opportunity. Man United don't like doing business in January, but they will do business if it's a player they'd look at in the summer anyway. And in Jobe Bellingham, you've probably got a player that gets Favell and Wilcox very excited, because they like these types of players, the Sescos, the Delaps, the younger player with sell-on potential who may be available cheap, who they feel that they can turn into something special at Manchester United. I would not be surprised if the increase in stories around him are done mainly from his side, but maybe to make Man United think about something in the January transfer window, because we do need numbers in that area. And it wouldn't stop us doing something in the summer as well. We do need two midfielders. So maybe you'd go for someone like Jobe Bellingham in January and then for somebody like Wharton or whoever in the summer. So I would keep an eye on that one. It is continuing issues at Dortmund. And obviously, you could say it's a bit like Mainoo at Man United. There is still November, half of October, December, where Bellingham could get himself back into Dortmund's plans. But if he doesn't, and this continues, then I think Man United may well be tempted by somebody that is saying, look, I want to come and play for you. And that might be what happens. Would I do the deal? No. No. I think that Cunha and Mbeumo represent what Manchester United need, in my opinion. We need players that come in, go to Anfield and live off that. You know, I'm ready for that. I don't think Garnacho's of this world. I don't think the Joe Bellingham's of this world. I'm not saying he's like Garnacho. I'm saying he's a 20-year-old, isn't he? He's a kid. I don't think he's even 20, actually. I don't think they go into those atmospheres and deliver now. And we have to deliver now. We were talking about this last night. After that Liverpool result, we have to deliver now. We can't be about the future anymore. There are people like Bruno Fernandes, Luke Shaw, Harry Maguire, Casemiro, who may only be able to deliver for the next 6 months. So you've got to bring players in for the now. And I think Jude Bellingham isn't a now player. And of course, I think also I'd be a little bit concerned about the noise around him. You know, you go from Sunderland to Dortmund, that's a huge step up. And in your first 2 months, you're moaning about game time. I don't think that's a good look. And I don't think United need that type of thing at United anymore. So for me, it would be a no. But I would keep my eye on this because it does tick a lot of boxes. It's a midfielder. He's young. We know United like that. He's also English, which helps for the homegrown. And he's got problems at Dortmund. So I wouldn't be surprised if Man United look at that. Cunha's performance is living rent-free in my head. Is that an example of why using goals assist to compare players is completely pointless? Salah versus Ronnie, says Rajaf. Studio Bridge, all the best to you and the team and the community. Thank you very much, Jack Cassidy. Appreciate that. Get your super chats in. We'll read those. I also want to talk about Morten Jormlen at Porto as well. Another story coming in this morning, basically saying that he was expected to be on the move in the summer, but with Gyökeres leaving, Sporting were very reluctant to lose another key player. Next summer, looks like he will be on the move, and Manchester United, the story goes from Portugal, that Ruben Amorim would be all over this deal if he could do it. Now, the interesting thing about Jormlen is he's an ex-Sporting player. I know there is this almost media-driven nonsense that we shouldn't buy players from a manager's former club because Erik ten Hag did it with Antony and Martinez, and I think he did it with somebody else as well, Onana, I suppose, to a certain extent. But Martinez was a good signing, Antony was a mistake, and Onana was a mistake. Jose Mourinho did this when he went to Chelsea. He brought players that he'd worked in previously with at Porto. So I think in the sense of Ruben Amorim bringing in one player from Sporting would not be enough for us to go, oh my God, this is a big mistake. Obviously he wanted Gyökeres, we've got Sesko, and many would say that's worked out well. But the thing I would like about Jormlen is the fact that he's mid-20s. He's a leader. I think he actually is the captain of Sporting. And it's straight into that area where you'd expect him to deliver now. So I would like that type of signing. It might not be the glamorous Premier League proven early 20s player like Wharton or Baleba or Ali Anderson, but it would be a player that knows this system very, very well, who is experienced and comes into the team a bit like Cunha and Mbeumo, which is exactly what I think Manchester United need. The flip side to that is he's never played in the Premier League before. Now, some people would say, that's a no. But, well, how many players haven't played in... Rodri hadn't played in the Premier League before, had he? Erling Haaland hadn't played in the Premier League before. I think it's about the player, it's about the manager, and it's about the environment. And I look at that Man United side, and I might be wrong, but I actually think it's becoming something it's not been for a very long time. It's becoming a place where, as a new signing, it ain't bad. It isn't bad. You know, you look at our new signings over the last 12 months, how many of them would you say are flops? You know, Yoro doing very, very well. Dorgu doing very, very well for young players. De Ligt, fantastic. Mazraoui, very good when he's fit. Lemens, I know it's only two games, but doing very, very well. Cunha and Mbeumo doing very, very well. So there's seven signings in the last 12 months that you'd say they're all doing well. They're probably not all going to be hits. One or two of them might end up being flops, but they're all doing very, very well. The only one that's not is Xerxes. And in some ways, I feel Xerxes not doing well because there's not space for him in the team. I don't think Xerxes a flop in the sense that you're rubbish, mate, get out. I think there's a lot of sympathy for Xerxes that he was brought in by a previous manager. He probably doesn't fit this manager's system. And, you know, he's a bit unfortunate. Agate would be the one that I would go, that was a lot of money in an area of the pitch where we're shit. That's the one where you'd go, okay, there's an error there. But as I've always said, the general consensus in football is that there is a 60% to 70% hit rate. Well, I've just named 8 transfers, I think I named nine. 6 or 7 of them are doing well. One of them, Xerxes, there's mitigating circumstances, and Agate's not doing well. That's a lot higher than 70%. So I think at the moment, if you're a Yulman or a Bellingham or whoever, and you're coming into this football club, I don't think I look at it anymore and go, oh God, we're going to ruin your career. Because I actually think a lot of the positives in United's side are the players that have come in the last 12 months. In fact, I'd say most of the positives in this United side are the players that come in the last 12 months, which sort of leans towards, if we keep doing that, at some point, the balance is going to really tip in the favour of positivity. That's what I would hope. Paul says, if Job is anything like Jude, then no, lived off the surname and can't cut it in Germany. Thank you very much. Savage says, absolutely no to Yulman. We're not that club where we can take risks. And Chippo says, I think it's time to give Casemiro some praise. His positioning and one-touch short, medium-range passing is important to the team. As soon as he comes off, we look vulnerable and lose control centrally, says Chip. Yes and no, actually. Chip, yes and no. I think when he went off on Sunday, we didn't really change. I think we tactically changed. We sat deeper. So I wouldn't say that Casemiro going off changed anything. I think we were naturally going deeper. Also, Casemiro was on for 20 minutes in the first half or 10 minutes in the second half, sorry. And we were the same anyway. But I think in the first half, I'd agree with you that he does help rotate the ball. But Casemiro will always be okay when you're playing close to your back five and counter-attacking. When you've not got to go up and down, up and down. When you're playing Brentford or maybe Brighton at the weekend and you've got to go up and down because you've got to attack and defend and the game gets more stretched, I think that's when he becomes a problem. And also, whether you rate Casemiro or not, I rate Casemiro 3 years ago. I think he's one of the best holding midfielders in the world. I don't really rate him that much anymore. It's a bit like Rooney. Rooney's a Man United legend, but in the last 18 months, I think it was time to go. And you are quite harsh to these people that you feel like guilty about being harsh about, but also ultimately you're only as good as your last game. And I think with Casemiro, regardless of whether I like him or not, he's not going to be here in 6 months. So we've got to look beyond that. And we've got to be having these conversations now, because if the club aren't having these conversations now, we're in big, big trouble, aren't we? So yeah, Yulman and Bellingham are certainly players to bring into the midfield equation. I think Yulman would be more for the summer. Bellingham might be a player that we look at in January. And when I say might be, remember Man United don't like doing business in January. So it may well be that, you know, if we're going to do a deal in January, it isn't going to be Wharton. It isn't going to be Yulman. It isn't going to be Anderson. And I don't think it's going to be Belieber. I think it would have to be somebody that a club is looking to move on, that we're looking at and going, we might look at them in the summer, so let's look at them now. And, you know, maybe that Bellingham one is probably one to keep an eye on. Although, I've just seen Savage again saying, what about Conor Gallagher on loan? I'd probably prefer that to Bellingham. I think I said last week I probably would. Another interesting story coming out this morning involves strikers. Now, I don't know what the intention of Manchester United is around strikers. I go back to the summer. Obviously, we ended up with Sesko. I think we're all very, very happy with that, what he brings to the team. But God forbid, if Sesko had a long layoff, then what would we do? We'd probably see what we saw on Sunday, where it's Cunha, Mount, Mbeumo rotating. And whilst that works quite well when you are up against a decent team, I think when you're up against the low block, that becomes problematic. You need a focal point striker. We wouldn't really have one. Xerxes could have a go, but I don't really think he's an out-and-out striker. So this is one of the reasons I would have liked to keep Rasmus around. I don't think it would have been good for Rasmus. I think he's better off doing what he's doing in Napoli, but for us, it would have been good to have a striker. I still think United need another striker. I just don't know where it is on their radar. But we have been linked with Ivan Toney this morning, who is a player that I think, after 18 months, at 29 years of age, is probably going to come back from Saudi at some point. Now, there's probably quite a lot of people in the chat saying, no, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do that. And I've pretty much been that. But that's always been when Ivan Toney would be the solution, not the support. And I mean, I don't know. I think sometimes with these Saudi deals, you go, you can't do them. They're on about £1 million a minute. How would we afford that? But then these deals do happen where they end up going to clubs and you're going, how are they affording that? So I think that this, I would never say it's not possible to do a deal from Saudi. And I would also say that Ivan Toney is probably going to want to come back to the Premier League at some point. Now, it's interesting because I did write this down. He's got 39 goals in 55 games in the Saudi League. I don't care. I don't know where to put that. I don't know what to do with that information because I don't know what that means in the Saudi League. But I know in the Premier League at Brentford, he was prolific. And we've just brought a player in from Brentford who was prolific in Mbeumo, who's been a joy to sign. So if Ivan Toney was coming to Manchester United in January as a backup striker for the end of the season on loan, I don't know that I would say no, because you can always say send him back in the summer. And that's what the rumour is. The rumour is it could be a loan deal in January, in which case something's better than nothing. And that something is pretty interesting. And he is the sort of striker that you definitely can chuck up front. When you think about Brentford, this is a guy who used to play up front on his own with 30%. So as a foil or support act to Sesko, it could be quite interesting. There does come with it a bit of ego, obviously 29 as well. But look, stranger things have happened. I don't know what Man United are going to be looking at in January, but if they were looking at a striker to get us through the last months, because what I'm thinking here is, and it is very premature, I'm thinking that we've just beaten Liverpool. I expect us to beat Brighton and I want us to beat Forest and Spurs, and we will be in a top five race. And as I said last night, or a top four race. And as I said last night, the danger that it's great to be in a top five race. It's where we want to be. Imagine being back in the Champions League earning £100 million a year. We're sorted. But the danger is the quicker we're back in that Champions League race, the longer we've got to stay in it. Part of me's like, I'd rather build gradually and get in the Champions League positions in May and stay there. Because if you look at last season, I think Nottingham Forest were in the top four from September to May and then didn't finish in the top five. So it's great. I think we've got a great opportunity to get into the top four, top five in the next few weeks. But how do you stay there? Does the inconsistency disappear? I don't think it does. So if I'm Sir Jim Radcliffe or Omar Berada or Jason Wilcox and United hit top four at some point between now and Christmas, I'm actually knocking on the door of the Glazers and I'm saying, it might not be sustainable for us to stay there. You know, we were 10th last week. We were 15th last season. You think we're going to be top four and stay there for the next 7 months? Now is the time to add the midfielder, to add the second striker. Now, that's how I would think. Part of me thinks Man United would go, we've made it. I always said we were a top four side. Let's try and hold on to it. But I wouldn't say no to a striker coming in January. And it's interesting because in Spain, we've been linked to Endrick at Real Madrid, who apparently isn't getting any time from Xabi Alonso. Again, you might look at him and go, completely different to Ivan Toney, young. I think he's still only 20. They called him the next Ronaldo at one point. Who's the lad who was going to be the next Ronaldo who's now back in... he's now back in Brazil. I saw him in the... I think he's at Palmeiras. We saw him in the Club World Cup. He was going to... Is it not Victor Roque? It might be Victor Roque, actually. I think it is Victor Roque. So yeah, look, Endrick would be very different to Ivan Toney, but in a different way, Sesko's the senior striker, Endrick's the supplementary striker. So that could be quite interesting as well. We've also been linked to Retué, who is also playing in the Saudi League. So there are options that we might look at. And I think every single one of them are a little bit like Jude Bellingham. You'd look at them in January and go, a little bit like Spurs did with Tell. Now, I don't think Tell's worked out that well at Spurs, but it was still a player over nothing that came into their team, played minutes. You know, did it really cause Spurs any problems having Tell? Whether he's a flop or not, did it help them having another option? I think it does. And I think from a Man United point of view, whether it's Ivan Toney, Endrick, Retué or somebody else, if you're in and around top five, why would you not be looking to just supplement that squad to make sure that you keep it? Because the worst scenario is, and it happened to us last year with Ahmad, is you don't do anything in the January transfer window. And in the first week of February, you pick up a major injury to an important player and you go, I wish we had. I think the first step is to get into the top five race properly. The next step, and it's the bigger one, is staying there. And I think staying there, you've got to cover as many problems as you can. 100%. I'd take Endrick in a heartbeat. He's got loads of potential, says Payne. I'd take whatever Amrim wants, really. I think that is the most important thing. What is it that Ruben Amrim is looking for at Manchester United? Rolkis says, I would rather use Xerxes. I like Xerxes. I mean, to be honest, I saw a story this morning linking Xerxes with PSV, which is, I don't think he's, I get the feeling Xerxes played for PSV, but I know he was at Bayern, Bologna. Was he at PSV or am I mixing him up with someone else? But as I said about Xerxes there, I do feel a bit sorry for Xerxes because you saw him at the full-time whistle on Sunday and he's part of the group, he's well-liked, he's a good lad. But in a way, I respect Amrim because he is part of the group, he is well-liked, but Amrim's not giving him minutes, which I respect Amrim for that because it's not mates rates, is it? It's not about whether you're a good lad, it's about whether you're good enough to get in my team. And I think that, I just think Xerxes is a victim of being bought by Ten Hag, maybe not being the person even Ten Hag wanted, a good player that just doesn't have a role in this first team. And then probably on the bench isn't even the first option. He's probably the second or third option. It's hard to see how Xerxes gets into this team unless we have a major injury crisis, in which case I think you've got to cash in. But I do take on board that there are people out there that really like Xerxes and would like to see him given more minutes. And I do agree that from January of last season to the injury at the end of last season, he was showing something we haven't seen before. But it's just so hard to see him getting in the team. We've barely any games this season anyway, so unless we have an injury crisis, I would bring in starters in January. No need to bloat the bench, says Chip. Well, you would always want to bring in starters, but I also think that I'm not going to bring a striker in that's going to take Sesko's position. I'm going to bring a striker in that challenges Sesko's position. That's where I would be looking at it if it was me. But, you know, there we go. Just to wrap up some of the transfer stuff before we get into the more topical stuff that's out there about Amrim and Maguire and other bits. Bruno Fernandes has been linked with Bayern Munich. Now, it's interesting because Christian Falk has said, whilst Bruno Fernandes is admired by Bayern Munich, he wouldn't be a priority because Musiala's coming back and they're looking at the lad from Cologne. I can't remember his name now. Scored a very good goal on our Bundesliga show a couple of weeks ago. There's a lot of talent in the Bundesliga that Bayern Munich are looking at. So, and they've also got some younger players coming through as well. So whether they'd be looking at Bruno Fernandes is debatable. But I think with Bruno Fernandes as well, he has got a very big wage. He's on £300,000 a week at Manchester United. So that would be prohibitive for Bayern Munich when you're talking about someone that would be 32 at the start of next season. So I don't think Bayern Munich and Bruno Fernandes is something we need to worry about or get excited about, whichever side of the fence you sit on. Having said that, this is probably coming from the international break where that story came out that Bruno maybe won't want to go to Saudi next season. But if Man United aren't in Europe, he'll want to stay in Europe to play in the Champions League again because that's what he wants to do. I think he's going to find himself with limited options, to be honest with you. I think when you sign the long contract at 29 or 30 on 300 grand a week at Man United, that's it. There's not going to be a European club that comes in and says, oh, we'll give you a 3 or 4 year contract on 300 grand a week as well. He's not going to get that. And also give Man United money. So I saw that story last week and I was like, that's just Bruno saying that if Man United have a bad season, he wants to leave. Because he's not going to get a European move. Not unless he's going to take a pay cut. And we're not going to let him go for free. And at the end of the day, Man United are going to go, hold on, Bruno, you could have doubled your wage and we could have got £100 million last summer. You now want us to let you go cheap so that they can cover your wages at Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. It's not going to happen. I do think at Bayern Munich, he'd be a good player. I do think that Bruno Fernandes, if a top club wanted him, would be a very good player for them. It's just at Man United where we're not using him properly. I mean, I was watching that goal again about half an hour ago. I've spent so much time looking at that goal because of what Maguire does. Now I look at what Bruno does. It's just unbelievable. Roy Keane absolutely nailed it. We spoke about it yesterday, but the way he crosses that first time, the weight, the power, it's perfect. And so many people would have took a touch. But so Bruno Fernandes will never not have suitors. But I don't see it. I don't see Europe. I really don't see Europe at all. I really, 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 really don't. Let me just have a catch up on some of your comments here. Oh, no, I don't know how to do this. Oh, it's not touchscreen, that's why. A couple of other things I want to talk about, but there's been a couple of super chats I've missed, so let me just read these. Will you keep Bruno, Delo, Harry Shaw and Casemiro for 26-27 season, says Sanshit. Right, I'll go through that list. Would I keep Bruno? No, not unless he's going to play as a number 10. Would I keep Delo? Well, Delo won't go anywhere in the summer, but I would use Delo as a bench player. That's what I would do, or I would sell him. Harry Maguire. Well, the interesting thing about Harry Maguire is that I was listening to what Steve Bruce had to say with Nicky Butt and Paul Scholes on their podcast and what Wayne Rooney said. And Steve Bruce was basically saying that, you know, it's great to see what Harry Maguire's doing. He was scapegoated by the Man United fan base. Wayne Rooney was saying that Harry Maguire was bullied by that MP who spoke about him in court or in Parliament. I think it was in an African country. And the truth about Harry Maguire is, like, I don't know what Steve Bruce is talking about being scapegoated. I remember that game against Spurs at Old Trafford in COVID, where Luke Shaw was going to clear the ball and he literally moved Luke Shaw out the way and Spurs scored. He did play shit for about 18 months. Like, it did happen. You know, I remember another Man United YouTuber calling him a C-U-T with the N in there. Now, I think that's too far, but it got very bad. It got very bad. And I think a lot of people feel guilty about that, myself included, but he was very bad. Like, it did happen. He was very bad. And I think Maguire would admit that himself. So I don't agree with scapegoat, because he did go very, very bad. And I remember it happening with Matic as well. He went very bad for about a year. And then he had this sort of glow up again. And I think, before I answer about whether I'd give Maguire another contract or not, I don't like people mis-selling the story, because by mis-selling the story, you devalue the story. He came to this club for £80 million. He was handed the captaincy too quick. He never settled. It was almost like a weight around his arm that sunk him. And he had nothing to fall back on because he was new at the club and the club was underperforming. And he became a symbol of poor performance for about 18 months. They took the armband off him. They tried to sell him. He nearly did go to West Ham. And then they wouldn't give him what he was entitled to. So he stuck around. He worked hard. He got back in the team. And he's had some amazing moments and some very good performances. While still having issues around pace and manoeuvrability, he's still managed to live off the positives of his game. And I think Paul Scholes said it. He's brilliant in both boxes, defensively and going forward. So I don't like the whole, oh, he was scapegoated or this, that, or the other, because that's part of the story. And there's so much that younger players can learn from that, where things actually did go bad. It's like going to prison for something you did do, And then you come out of prison and you're rehabilitated, you've learned from that experience and you do good. And I'm not saying Harry Maguire went to prison, but in a footballing sense, it went bad. And then it's come out the other end. And I think if you don't acknowledge the journey, you don't acknowledge where he is now. And I think to pretend that the criticism wasn't right is to devalue and disrespect the story of where he's come from. And I think that's really important to say, because I think when Amrim speaks about the example that Harry Maguire is and the experience that Harry Maguire has, I spoke about this at the weekend and I was like, what experience? He's never won anything. He's never won anything. He doesn't know how to teach these players to win a Champions League or a Premier League. But that's probably a little bit too literal. I think you can have different types of experience. And I think when Amrim is talking about experience with Harry Maguire, I think he's talking about you can be rock bottom and you can be criticised justifiably, but you can still climb out of that and be praised and called Sir Harry and build him a statue and score winning goals against Lyon and, you know, the best result, the best night I've had in years, Lyon. And then, you know, not far behind it, a win at Anfield at the weekend. And I think that's what Amrim's talking about with experience with Maguire. And I miss that. I miss that. And I think in life, you've got to sometimes put your hands up and go, I didn't get that. I should have got that. You know, maybe some of you did get it. Maybe some of you've only just got it as well. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. I didn't really get what Harry Maguire's experience is that Amrim's talking about. I was like, what experience? You know, he's experienced many managers being sacked. You know, he's never won anything. And that experience might not be a good thing. But I think what Amrim is talking about is the experience to deal with being rock bottom and getting back up again. Now, what's the experience that Dalot brings? What's the experience that Luke Shaw brings? What's the experience that Casemiro brings? What's the experience that Bruno brings? These are different experiences that we maybe need to figure out what they are. And maybe some of them are a load of bollocks. I mean, what does Dalot bring? I don't know. Experience-wise, I don't know. I still see him as a 21-year-old with potential. But so in answering the question, Harry Maguire, whether I would keep him at the club or not, I think last week I would have said no. And it's not the Anfield goal. To be honest, it's not the Liverpool goal. I'm not flip-flopping. Last week, I would have said no, because I think the wage of 190K has to come down by half. And the older he gets, he will get even slower. He will get more injury prone. But then you just start to think, does that experience that he has that's unique to him, and it's not winning trophies, it's what I've just said, How valuable is that just to keep that around? We kept Johnny Evans around because he was experienced in what it was like under Sir Alex. Do you keep Harry Maguire around because he's experienced in coming back from obscurity? And it might be worth that 100K a week. But will he get enough game time as well? I think he's going to get reduced game time because I do agree with what Paul Scholes said last week. I do think, even though people have ridiculed Paul Scholes, I still think he's right. I still think physically, Harry Maguire and a few others are going to become less and less suitable for this league. I think when you're defending your box for 90 minutes, he's brilliant. You know, he always used to play well against Everton, didn't he? Because it's lots of high balls into the box. But the modern player, it's normally back and forth. So look, it depends on a few things, but I'm probably more open to it than I was. Casemiro's got to go. His wage is ridiculous and he's a bit older and he's playing in the midfield. It's different. He's got to go. Luke Shaw, if he can get some money for him, great, because after the World Cup, I think he'll be injured again. And yeah, can't see him taking a pay cut, says John. I think that was about Torres. Christoph says, previous managers started well and results progressively got worse. Hopefully under Amrim, he's torn it up and from now on, the results will get better. Well, you know what? The 8 o'clock shows are brilliant and they're always worth a watch. But what caught my eye last night, and it was again from the chat, was how Ruben Amrim's win ratio at the moment is somewhere between 30 and 40%. We sacked Ten Hag and Oli with a 54% win ratio. We actually sacked Mourinho with a 57% win ratio. For Ruben Amrim to get his win ratio up to 54%, he's got to win the next 14 games in a row. So he's got a lot of work to do. And you might be right with that, Christoph. Maybe it is a case of, you know, he he bounces back in a longer term, but it's going to take a lot of wins or a long time for him to build that win ratio up. It's a long way back, but hopefully he can do it. Good point. With barely any games this season, I've done that one from Chip. Are we eliminating Obi from the conversation? Well, I'm not eliminating Obi from the conversation, Nozzy, but it seems to me like at the moment, he should have took that loan. We were talking about it in the summer. Like some of us were saying in the summer that we would have loaned him. And I think that would have been the right thing to do because he doesn't seem to be getting any game time, does he? I just want to talk about Amrin for a moment. Just Christoph, you just prompted something in my mind that I was watching last night. I saw that Jamie Carragher was on Monday Night Football talking about how Amrin got his tactics spot on. And then it came into my head how somebody in the chat last night had said, when we lose, it's the player's fault, but when we win, it's the manager's fault. And I thought, it's a good point. It is a good point. When we lose, a lot of the time, it is the player's fault. And when we win, a lot of the time, it's Amrin who got it right. But I thought, well, you know what? Again, that's a little bit too literal, isn't it? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Cunha, Yoro, Dorgu when he came on, Bruno's final ball, Maguire, Lemens, Mbeumo, Ahmad. I saw a lot of interaction and praise around those players after the game. So they definitely did get praised. They definitely did. I've also seen us lose games like Brentford and Grimsby and Amrin get absolute pelters. So I don't think it's that simple to say, oh, when we lose, it's the players and when we win, it's the manager. I think that's way too literal. But we cannot ignore the fact that that wasn't 11 players that went out and won that game on Sunday. Ruben Amorim provided the game plan. And as Jamie Carragher said, and we were talking about it in the match reaction as well, how we approach that game, we don't win the game if we don't play that way. Like Ruben Amorim clearly told us to sit deep, put our two midfielders in front of our back five, put our three forwards in front of the behind the ball, and let them play in front of us. Don't pressure the ball and wait for the opportunity to pounce. And we did that for 90 minutes. And at times it didn't look like we were parking the bus because Liverpool, like Van Dijk said, would rush a pass and we won the ball a lot more than you would have thought. I thought Liverpool's possession was going to be 70%. It was actually closer to 60%. And that's because Liverpool were trying to play through us too quickly, but we were well set. So we didn't need to press the ball. We were winning the ball back and then we were countering ourselves. So if we'd played a different way, if we'd pressed the ball high up the pitch, Liverpool play through that press, they've got more space to get at us. So that's a direct instruction from the manager. I agree with Amrin. Stylistically, we made a lot of mistakes. There was a lot of opportunities where we could have broken better and we played the wrong pass. But when you go out with a game plan like Amrin did without the ball, and the players put the work in, and then they win the game, Amrin set that team up in that way. And if he'd set it up in a different way, we might have lost the game. So he does deserve the credit for that performance. Absolutely. I just can't wait for Brighton. And in a way, I'm quite glad we're not playing in Europe. Because if we were playing in a Europa League group game this week, I'd be like, nah, what's that mean? It's about the Premier League. Even if we were playing bloody, I don't know, Fenerbahce or whoever on Thursday night and then Brighton was on a Sunday, I'd still be more focused on the Brighton game. That's the game where it's going to matter most. That's the game that matters. And I said this in the summer. I don't like the fact that we're not in Europe, but now that we're involved, having all this time to analyse and prepare for the next game, the Premier League is just so important to us this year. I'd almost say I'd obviously rather be in the Europa League than not being in Europe. But part of me is like, let's just be in the fucking Champions League or not at all. And that's what this season's got to be. Get back into the Champions League and then never leave it, certainly. spoke to you about Bellingham, spoke about Amorim, spoke about Bruno and Xerxes. Yeah, well, I wanted to sort of circle back to this. Get Chiesa, Mark, says Mike. Simi says he got schooled by Ange, Amorim out. Mate, I don't think there's a United fan out there, Amorim in, Amorim out, Amorim sat on the fence, that doesn't acknowledge the fact that we finished 15th last year, that we were disappointing in the Europa League final, that we lost to Brentford and Grimsby. There's nobody out there that's ignoring the fact that just to catch up with Ollie's win ratio, he's got to win the next 14 games in a row. I mean, that's not going to happen. So whatever happens, I don't think Amorim gets close to Ollie's sacked win ratio for another year, at least. So the pressure's always going to be there because the Amorim outers will always go, well, look at his win ratio. Look, it's going to take a long time. They're always going to have that in their back pocket. And they're always going to have Grimsby and they're always going to have Brentford. The question is, how long can he survive? It's funny, I was saying to Ryan, our producer, that we were talking about the November international break. And I was thinking about doing something in the November international break. And then I was like, yeah, but you never know if things go badly, whether Amorim could get the sack. And it's going to be a busy November international break. And I was saying, now he's beat Liverpool, there's no way he'll get sacked in the November international break. Even if he lost to Brighton, Forest and Spurs, which he won't, he wouldn't get sacked in November because they'd go, well, look at the Liverpool game. So that Liverpool win, even if he loses his next three, is going to give him time. And that the reason I say that is it, for Amorim, it's about survival. It's about results and survival. And you already know that that Liverpool win pretty much gets him to the start of December now. Another couple of wins, that'll get him till New Year. So that's what I'm looking at with Amorim now. I would be stunned after what Sir Jim Ratcliffe said a couple of weeks ago if they sacked him before May anyway. So the way I'm feeling with Amorim now is I'm quite relaxed that we've got between now and May to show some movement in the right direction. And I think that that Liverpool result buys him more time, and I think time gives him time to build, and I think that's what we want to start seeing, isn't it? Hi Mark, just wanted to let you know we've sent you a few emails to Storybook Football about our Storybook Football, which was genuinely inspired by you and the community. Thanks, pal. I'll take a look at that. Thank you very much for your comments. Do we have a different type of tactics for the different teams in the Prem just so we can compare and try and win, or will we use the Liverpool game as a way forward? I think it's a good question from Alan. I don't think that we will. I don't think that we can approach every game like Liverpool, because take Brighton on Saturday evening. If we sit there with a back five and then our two midfielders in front of them and then our three forwards behind the ball and let Brighton have the ball, I'd give it 5 minutes and the crowd will become restless, quite rightly. You can't do that. So the way we played against Liverpool will be unique to Chelsea away, Man City at home, Arsenal away, Liverpool at home. We'll do that against them, definitely. But we've now got to win in other ways. So, you know, you look at Burnley, the way that we won that game was a lot more on the front foot, which left space for them to get goals. You look at Brentford, we tried to play more on the front foot, which left them space to get goals. I don't want to see us playing like Liverpool against Brentford or Brighton. I don't want to see that. So he will go more on the front foot, which will leave more space, but might lead to more goals. Because ultimately against Liverpool, we didn't have loads of chances. So you go more on the front foot and you hope that you're going to score more goals whilst leaving a bit more space and the potential to concede more. And I think that's what will happen. But look, as I said, I think for me, the win against Liverpool gives the manager more time. I want to see more of a vision at Manchester United. I've said it numerous times. We saw it against Chelsea. We saw it against Liverpool. Maguire, Shaw, Dalot, Casemiro, Bruno in the midfield. That's half a team of players that for various reasons aren't really first team players in a year. Some would say shouldn't even be a first team player now, but not in a year. I can't see Shaw, I can't see Maguire, I can't see Dalot, I can't see Bruno really, and I can't see Casemiro being first team players in a year for different reasons. So half that team needs to change, and then we start to see the vision. The vision to me is this. Mbeumo and Cunha have been incredible signings that most of you wanted for the very simple reason that they're mid-20s and they've proven themselves at clubs where it ain't easy. It ain't easy at Wolves and Brentford to get goals and assists consistently. And those types of characters in a Man United side bring exactly what we saw at Liverpool, two fantastic performances. They're two big positives without a shadow of a doubt. You've then got Lemens, who is a young goalkeeper who in two games has shown more confidence and stability than a £50 million goalkeeper showed in 2 years. You've then got Dorgu, who for me was thrown into a very bad situation in January at 20, who is still 20 and is getting better and better and better and will continue to do so. You've got Lenny Yoro, who I just can't believe how good he was coming on as a substitute late on at Anfield, who has been dropped a couple of times this season, took it in his stride and is inevitably going to become a very, very important part of our defence. You've got De Ligt, who already is and is our player of the season. You've got Mazraoui, who, although he's had a couple of injuries, is Mr. Consistent. So then you're up to seven. You've also got Sesko, who, again, hasn't been here that long, but looks like he's one for the future that's going to get better and better with an incredible mentality. And then you've got people like Ahmad, who are already at the club, who are still very, very young and are massively of our future. So they've got nine players there. Nine players that I would go, well, that's the future of Manchester United. Nine. And you could argue that there might be more because, you know, who knows what happens with the likes of Ugarte, Martinez, Mount. Even Bruno might prove us all wrong in the midfield or go back to number 10. And then you've got supplementary players like Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw, who are going to be around this season to, you know, pop in here and there. And, you know, Delo is a bench player and Casemiro's still here. But you've got nine real positive players that can be part of our future for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. None of them are midfielders. That's the big problem. Like, none of them are midfielders. And I'd love Mainoo to be part of that. I would love Mainoo to be part of that. But at the moment, it's just a big question mark, isn't it? But nine players where I go, well, they're part of this future. They're part of Man United's future. That's a massive positive. That's what we've got to build out. And the midfield. And when you look at it like that, yeah, this is only because we've just beaten Liverpool. I don't know whether I'd be sat here doing this if we'd lost, but they can be part of a real positive future at Manchester United. And that's a lot of players. It's a lot of players and it's a lot of potential and it's a lot of growth if we can do it. Definitely. Look at the first frame of this show's recording, says Nick. Well, I can't do that. Casemiro has so much potential, says Super Son. Just need Sesko to get a few goals to get him going. Well, I disagree, Stephen. I mean, he scored against Brentford. He scored against Sunderland. He didn't play against Liverpool until being a late sub. So I think Sesko's, for a Manchester United side, two goals in two games is like Haaland scoring two hat-tricks. Sesko, to me, is doing absolutely fine. I'd love to get to a point where a striker at Man United is scoring two goals a game, but I mean, we've had strikers that don't score two goals a month. So I'm quite happy with what Sesko's doing at United and certainly would be a work in progress. Amrim has convinced fans Cobbie has no place at the club. Look, I want to put Cobbie Mainoo in that list and let's make it a perfect 10. But I also have to be realistic to, at the moment, he's just not part of it, is he? You know, Dorgu, Yoro, Sesko, Ahmad, De Ligt, all the other players I mentioned, they're part of it. Mainoo at the moment's out on the edge and he's not getting minutes. And in January, he's going to be saying the same thing again, quite rightly, I want to go. So, you know, sometimes you get players that, you know, I remember Sir Alex getting rid of David Beckham and Van Nistelrooy and Stam and Roy Keane. I didn't want it to happen, but we still won titles and stuff. So I think that with Mainoo, I can't include him in that because he's not part of it at the moment. I want him to be, you want him to be, but I can't sit here and say Mainoo's number 10 because, no, I don't mean position number 10, because at the moment we're not seeing it, but he could become part of that. And then one of your midfield positions is solved as well, isn't it? So maybe Ugarte becomes really good as well. You know, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And we can't play everyone, like Ladios says. Anyhow, thank you everybody for, I didn't say Eddie Howe, I said anyhow. Thanks everyone for tuning in this morning. Great to be in the set in Manchester. Make sure you smash a like and subscribe. We're back live with you at 2 o'clock. 8 o'clock show tonight will be at 7 o'clock because I'm doing the Champions League for the next two nights. And next 8 o'clock show will be Thursday for the live preview for Brighton. But we are live at 7 o'clock for the next two nights because it's Champions League night, where I'll be on That's Football. Career mode, I did last night. If anyone didn't see the episode, FC 26 career mode, episode 8 went out last night. Thanks for watching. Take care, stay safe, and I will speak to you on the next one.